Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Courier for Tuesday, October 10th. And I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and we are reading the e-edition of the Courier today. And I would like to remind you that you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. All right, what is going on this cool fall morning? Hey, fall is here, folks. Better get ready for you-know-what showing up sooner than later. All right, I've got a picture here. Let's see. The article is Another First Day of School. And I've got some young ladies here walking here. It says, students from Shell Rock get off the bus for their first day at North Ridge Elementary in Waverly on Monday. All right, let's see what it says here. In Waverly, it was move-in day for 177 children as North Ridge Elementary opened its doors for the first time on Monday. Ground broke for North Ridge and Prairie West elementaries in May 2022, with plans to move the children from aging Shell Rock Elementary School to North Ridge when it opened in the fall. According to Waverly Shell Rock students, Superintendent Ed Clamfoth, the day marks the beginning of the payoff to nearly a year and a half of planning and hard work, and he's glad to see it start to come to fruition. But there's still work to be done. It's safe, it's passed all inspections and that sort of thing. It's just a lot of minor things. In a project this size, in a building this size, you're going to have a lot of those things that kind of hang on for a while, Clamfoth said. So yes, it does feel good. It'll feel much, much better when we get all those things done. And we've got a polished product here. The total cost for North Ridge and Prairie West currently sits at $48 million, with a further $7 million going to the Shell Rock renovation. Funding for the projects came from general obligation bonds approved by Waverly Shell Rock voters and the sale of revenue bonds approved by the Board of Education. Clamfoth said that more than 100 volunteers helped with the moving process, including the Wartburg College wrestling team. The effort wasn't lost on Shell Rock principal Suze Smolkehagen. I can't express the gratitude that I feel to all the folks who made this happen, and especially to the teachers and the staff and the work that they devoted to making this a great spot for our kids to learn, Smolkehagen said. I could hardly sleep this morning because I was just thinking about having the kids here finally and completing this transition to the new place, she goes on to say. This day is a culmination of the work of so many people, not just the folks who got this building ready, but the families and the community friends and staff who volunteered time to get this building ready and to move us back here. So this is super exciting today. The building will host students from pre-kindergarten through fourth grade. Northridge sports new amenities that previous Waverly Shell Rock Elementary schools didn't have. They include a dedicated art room and a dedicated music room. Students previously shared one room. There's also a dedicated cafeteria and gymnasium, meaning that physical education doesn't have to work around lunch. One of the big differences in all of these schools, including the Shell Rock innovation, is to have those spaces dedicated for those purposes, Clamfoth said. Though I guess in Shell Rock, we're not going to be able to separate the gym and cafeteria. It also was an exciting day for teachers like Christy Steert, having taught at Waverly Shell, but says Northridge is the nicest she's been able to work in. It's just wonderful to see facilities that are going to accommodate kids. Some of the things that I guess I've always looked at and dreamt of we have in this building here, Steert said. This would be the first time I've had new furniture in 34 years of teaching, or a new facility, so lots of great things happening for kids. Steert also expressed anticipation for the new and improved Shell Rock Elementary and Prairie West. Excited to see what the remodel at Shell Rock will look like for those kids, and then just how the two buildings in town will be occupied by the students of Waverly, she said. It's been a process this year. It's almost like the first day of school again today, which is always a good thing. I like the first day of school because it's new, beginning a new year, every year. According to Klamfuth, the students will finish the school year at Northridge before returning the newly renovated Shell Rock Elementary for the 2024-2025 school year. There's also another picture. The Waverly Shell Rock Marching Band greets the Shell Rock students temporarily moving into Northridge on Monday morning. So that was nice to have a welcome for the students. This is a big deal for them. That's terrific. All right. What else is going on here in the paper here today? Grout Museum plans Cosmic Creep Show on Friday. Planetarium event to explore vampire and cannibal stars. In Waterloo, there's no Bela Lugosi in the Grout Museum's spooky planetarium show, but there are plenty of vampires and a few cannibals, too. Starbite, a Friday the 13th show in the North Coruscant Family Planetarium, will explore a terrifying and fascinating side of the universe. Four showings are already sold out, but tickets remain for the 9 p.m. presentation on the 13th of October. There are planets and stars that suck hydrogen from another, like vampires suck blood from their victims, said Benjamin Miller, a Grout Museum assistant. These vampire or symbiotic stars usually occur in pairs with the vampire as the smaller star. It begins siphoning off hydrogen from its victim and grows larger. And eventually, the victim star is destroyed or transformed into a white, duff star. Sometimes the star gets its revenge by exploding into a supernova that takes out the vampire as well. Cosmic cannibal stars essentially swallow or absorb a companion star. For example, astronomers believe that Betelgeuse, a red supergiant in the Orion constellation, swallowed a companion star. Miller researched, wrote, recorded, and narrated the script for the out-of-this-world experience. Well, that looks like fun. Okay, what else is going on in the paper today? Let's now go to the next page of the paper here. CF Clinic finds ways to help LGBTQ plus pediatric patients. In Cedar Falls, no longer able to provide gender-affirming care to minors, one medical clinic has partnered with out-of-state doctors' offices to give patients the care that they need. On September 18th, Senate File 538 forced the Unity Point LGBTQ clinic in Cedar Falls to stop providing puberty blockers, hormones, and surgeries to treat gender dysphoria for those under age 18. Health providers are still able to see LGBTQ children in their offices but cannot use these treatments. Medical professionals who violate the law could be subject to discipline from a state licensing board. Individuals can bring lawsuits against doctors who continue providing gender-affirming care. To still help patients seeking that care, Rachel Benson, a medical provider at the clinic, is referring children and their families to out-of-state clinics. Benson said that she's thankful because 13 clinics in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois have stepped up to partner with her office. Nine of those clinics are through the University of Minnesota hospitals and clinics, which are mostly near the Twin Cities, about a three-hour drive from the Cedar Valley area. We are very grateful for all of these clinics able and willing to help us, especially because care of the patient is the first and most important thing, Benson said. We want to make sure that the patients get the care they need to help prevent detrimental outcomes when they can't seek gender-affirming care. The Trevor Project, a nonprofit that focuses on suicide prevention in the LGBTQ community, said that transgender and non-binary children are 2 to 2.5 times more likely to experience depressive symptoms, seriously consider suicide, and attempt suicide compared with their cisgender peers. The organization also found that 45% of the LGBTQ youths seriously consider attempting suicide in the past year, including more than half of transgender and non-binary children. Bremer County okays $4.7 million in communications upgrade. In Waverly, Bremer County will sell up to $4.7 million in general obligation bonds for an overhaul of its obsolete emergency communication infrastructure and equipment. The Board of Supervisors voted unanimously to issue the bonds as part of the financing for what Bremer County Sheriff Dan Pickett says is a little more than a $5 million undertaking. The board did not need to go to voters for a referendum because the upgrade is deemed part of an essential service. It's an essential service because it's needed for the safety of everybody and all first responders. This is so police and the fire and EMS can talk to each other, said Pickett. Officials hosted public meetings to inform residents of the impending debt. Officials reported hearing from a substantial number of people in favor, but none openly against the measure. Supervisors said, if we're the people voting on it, we want people to know about it, said Pickett. The debt will result in the average county portions of the property tax bill being $38.80 more per $100,000 of property valuation each year over the 5 years that it will be needed to pay it off. The balance of the cost is being covered from the county's available pool of 911 surcharge rate funds collected over several years, said Pickett. Supervisors entered into an agreement with Motorola Solutions Incorporated to carry out the improvements starting in 2024, scheduled to wrap up in the middle of 2025, that will allow first responders to access the Iowa statewide interoperable communications system. The money will go toward a number of improvements, including upgrades to the interior of the structurally sound communication tower first responders utilize in summer and two new dispatch communication consoles there. Elgin sex offender arrested over social media accounts in Elgin. An Elgin sex offender who attempted to travel to Canada has been arrested for allegedly having unapproved social media accounts and a phone he hadn't registered with the authorities. Fayette County Sheriff's deputies arrested Phillips Carl Statham, age 49, on Wednesday for a parole violation and a new charge of failure to provide information to the state sex offender registry. Court records indicated that Statham was sentenced to prison in 2007 on third-degree sexual abuse for incidents involving girls under age 14 in Chickasaw County. He was released on parole in August of 2021. As part of his release, Statham was required to have a monitoring system on his cell phone. During an October 3, 2023 appointment with his parole officer, authorities found a phone he hadn't declared on his registration and discovered TikTok, Facebook, and Snapchat social media accounts that were registered. He had also searched for sexual content on the phone as well as information about fairs and carnivals near West Union in July and events to other communities. Officials also determined Statham had attempted to travel to Canada in April of 2023 but was denied entry at the border. One arrested in Falls Avenue shooting in Waterloo. One person has been arrested in connection with a shooting that sent one person to the hospital last week. Waterloo police arrested Quatez Hill Watson, age 18, on Friday on two counts, each of intimidation with a weapon and reckless use of a firearm causing damage and injury. The shooting happened at about 2 p.m. October 3rd near Falls Avenue. Witnesses said that Hill Watson was wearing a ski mask when he began shooting at someone from an alley. One of the bullets struck a vehicle parked at Metro Mart 2332 Falls Avenue, and debris hit the leg of a teenage girl inside the vehicle. Paramedics with Waterloo Fire Rescue took her to a hospital for treatment. Investigators said that she wasn't the intended target. Bullets also struck the Falls Plaza office building at 2315 Falls Avenue, according to court records. Police found several spent shell casings and identified Hill through nearby surveillance videos. Officers with the department's tactical unit executed a search warrant on his home on Friday. All right, let's move on here with the paper and see what else we've got here going on here. Let me just turn the page here. Bear with me for just a moment. All right, I've got a, this is a huge picture here of a Trump rally. Supporters listen as former President Donald Trump speaks at an Iowa Commit to Caucus event at the National Cattle Congress on Saturday in Waterloo. Trump rallies supporters. Okay. So, calling 2024 the most important election, he urges people to caucus. And there is a picture of Trump, former President Donald Trump, speaks at the Iowa Commit to Caucus event at the National Cattle Congress on Saturday in Waterloo. Thousands came out on Saturday to see former president and Republican frontrunner Donald Trump as he made a campaign stop at the National Cattle Congress grounds. It's one of a slew of stops Trump has made in the state leading up to the Iowa caucuses in January, including one in Cedar Rapids the same day. Trump used the opportunity to address his supporters. Things are not the same as they were just 3 years ago when you take a look. They weren't ever as good, and now they are really probably maybe the worst we've ever seen in the terms of our country, Trump goes on to say. You need to get every patriot you know and make sure that they're registered and get them out to vote and get them to go to their local precinct caucus meeting at 7 p.m. on Monday, the 15th of January. Urging his supporters to vote, he likened the election to going to war with some very evil people. We're not going to have a country left if we don't win this election, Trump said. And I used to say that about around 2016 that this is the most important election, and I meant it. This is now the most important election. Trump touched on a variety of topics, speaking about immigration, the economy, the war in Ukraine, the recent terrorist attacks in Israel. He also talked about his legal troubles. Now, the nice part about my indictments is that they've driven us because they realize they're fake and phony, he goes on to say. I'm the only person that ever got indicted whose poll numbers shot up through the roof, he boasted. The rally was organized by the Republicans of Black Hawk County, committee members. April Melton said that she's been making calls since May and found out last Friday that Trump would stop in Waterloo. It's fantastic to see all of my friends and my local community members come out and support a former president and the front runner of his 2024 election, Melton said. The majority of those in attendance were local, including Neera Akey from Waterloo, a retiree. Akey worked at Hy-Vee until recently to supplement her income. She said that that is one of her main reasons for supporting Trump. I'm tired of the economy. I'm tired of all the freebies people get. Like you said, I'm 78 years old, still working, and there's something wrong with this picture. Another local supporter who waited in line to see the former president was Kevin Wolf. Wolf said that he was always a fan of Trump, the celebrity, but only voted for him in 2016 out of opposition to Hillary Clinton. He became a supporter after seeing him in office. He's the best president we've ever had, and I'm hoping to see him back in office, Wolf said, or at least someone with the same kind of ideals as him. The event attracted people from outside the Waterloo-Cedar Falls area as well. Friends Nicole Nosbeach and Connie DeAndra were among them. Nosbeach came from Clear Lake, born with her right side weaker than her left. She said that Trump's policies had been beneficial to those with medical disadvantages. This included the 2018 Right to Try Act, which allows terminal patients to try new procedures before they are fully approved by the Food and Drug Administration. No speech also credits Trump with awakening her interest in politics, saying that he inspired her to potentially run for office. We need a voice. That's why I want to run for office, to inspire people like myself. No speech said, because some don't have a voice or don't know how to vote because they never got taught. All right, let's go on here to the next page of the paper and see what's going on here. Actually, we've got an ad there, so let me go to the next page yet again. Okay, we are now on the opinion page of the paper. There are a number of cartoons, political cartoons, here in the paper. Let me see if I can describe this to you. Hold on for just a sec, and I will tell what they say. There's a picture of our world. And there is a satellite over what appears to be an absolutely massive hurricane, except instead of it being a massive hurricane, it says national debt. And the caption is there such a thing as a Category 11 hurricane? So I guess that makes its point. Let's see what else we have here. We've got a cartoon of a bear who represents Russia. And he's got a beehive stuck to his snout, and there are bees stinging him. And it says right here, "Ah, oh, come on, bees, let Winnie the Pooh leave his nose in." All right, let's see. What else do we have here? We've got a picture of the president sitting at his desk. There's a one of his staff, and there's a dog biting his arm all the way up to near his neck. And it says inflation on the dog. And the caption is, "Sir, your dog is eating my wallet." In case, folks, you don't know that one of their dogs, I think his name is Major, has been having biting issues with the Secret Service. And they finally took him and removed him from the White House because he was really having issues. So that's what that means. And then finally, let's see, what else do we have here? Okay, there's a picture of Taylor Swift and these young kids running after her for autographs. And it says Swifties on the top. And there's an executive from the NFL. It says NFL execs on his suit jacket. And all there is a dollar sign on top of his head. So I think that probably... I think you get the idea on that particular one. All right, let's take a look now at the two editorials. Well, at least certainly one of them. Let's read first the guest column. This is the GOP war to cancel woke culture. Charlie Chaplin once said, "A day without laughter is a day wasted." Life around my dad Lester was filled with jokes and teasing and what became known as Lesterisms. Raised around the humor of Red Skelton, Red Fox, Jonathan Winters, Rodney Dangerfield, Richard Pryor, George Carlin, Laurel and Hardy, plus a subscription to Mad Magazine, I was programmed to seek out laughter. If these comedians were living their take, if those comedians were living their take on the GOP's recent cancel woke culture war, would even make card-carrying Republicans laugh. There are over 400 companies and products and individual GOP party leaders who are calling to be canceled, for example, boycotted, because they either questioned Donald Trump's leadership or took a stance on racism, sexuality, gender, race, diversity, equity, inclusion, social injustices, wellness, and life balance that counters Republican values. Now, I can't read all of this. It's a pretty long article, but here are some of the examples. Number one, United America and Delta Airlines, canceled. Avis Budget Enterprise and Hertz Car Rental, canceled. McDonald's, Starbucks, Chick-fil-A, Cracker Barrel, Golden Corral, Taco Bell, IHOP, and Red Lobster, canceled. Sports Lovers, NFL, NBA, and MLB, canceled. HBO, Netflix, canceled. French fries, yes, French fries, canceled. Harley Davidson, couldn't be, canceled. Hershey, Procter & Gamble, Kellogg's, Nabisco, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, canceled. Well, you've got just to an internet search on the list of things that conservatives have canceled, as well as Nebraska taxpayers for freedom. Guaranteed, you will laugh. It's ironic that the Republican Party purports to believe in a free enterprise, yet it's opposed to corporations' pro-environmental, pro-social, and pro-governance woke factors of running a successful business. Plus, the GOP candidates must be oblivious to the fact that the majority of the registered Republicans support corporations' environmental, social, and governance endeavors. Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines woke as being aware of and actively attentive to important facts and issues, especially issues of racial and social justice. Being woke is about being alert to racial prejudice and discrimination, being vigilant toward social issues and challenging oppression. Martin Luther King once said, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. Racial and social justice issues matter. For this reason alone, there is a compelling case to be woke and choose growth." The younger strata of America, millennials ages 27 to 42, and Generation Z ages 11 to 26, are America's most pro-woke, culturally awoke group fighting for social justice, equal rights, and equal opportunity. They are the most active social media users who readily broadcast their fight against injustice, intolerance, and discrimination. Finally, millennials are the largest electorate population, and Generation Z voter turnout in 2022 was higher than that of Generation Xers, 43 through age 58, age range, and the millennials. Logic reasons that with the Republican Party touting its cancel woke culture belief, more young voters ages 42 and under will purposely avoid GOP candidates in the 2024 election. Voters older than 42 will soon, if not already, also rebel against the GOP's cancel woke culture folly. What Republican presidential candidates support, the cancel woke cultures, and aren't grasping issues like gender pay gap, gender discrimination, racial inequality, racial injustice, LGBTQ, Iowa rights, sexual harassment, sexual assaults, environmental and climate change, First Amendment rights, Nazi-like book banning, fair voter registration, and unencumbered voting opportunity. They include former President Donald Trump, former VP Mike Pence, Governor Ron DeSantis, Governor Doug Burgum, former Governor Nick Haley, Senator Tim Scott, and Vivek Ramaswamy. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has rejected his GOP peers' cultural war rhetoric. The GOP's 2020 presidential election campaign had no platform, and we saw how that worked out. The Republicans' 2024 cancel woke culture platform, which only 24% of Republican votes support, will be quite the joke come November 5th, 2024. Americans must be compassionately woke to racial and social justice issues. Otherwise, you must be asleep. Are you woke or asleep? So I thought I wouldn't be able to read this whole article, because we're coming up to the half-hour broadcast of our program, but I was able to do so. That was written by Steve Corbin, who is a professor of marketing in the University of Northern Iowa. All right, let's continue on here. I'll tell you what, since we are reading, coming up closely to our half-hour broadcast time here, let me remind you that you are listening to the reading of the e-edition of the Courier, okay, for Tuesday, the 10th of October. I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the blind and the disabled. We have a bunch of obituary news announcements here, so let's get to those right now. William Bill Hamm, age 78, has passed at the Cedar Valley Hospice Center. And let's see, when he's His memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. on Sunday, the 5th of November at the Wartburg College Chapel and live streamed. Guests are invited to wear orange in celebration of Bill's beloved alma mater. Private graveside services will be held at a later date. And in lieu of flowers, memorials can be designated to William E. Hamm scholarships at Wartburg College. Gordon Cox has passed of Hiawatha on Wednesday, the 4th of October. And let's take a look at his funeral service arrangements. They will be held on October 13th, the service, at 3 p.m. at Lock at Tower Park at 4140 Kimball Avenue in Waterloo. Well, a celebration of life, 4 to 7 at Lock at Tower Park. And memorials may be directed to the family. Genevieve Lenskow has passed at the age of 73 at the Pinnacle Specialty Care of Natural Causes. And let's see what we have. Services will be held on Wednesday, the 11th of October at Lockett Tower Park, 4140 Kimball Avenue in Waterloo, with burial in the Garden of Memories Cemetery. Visitation will be held Tuesday, the 10th of October at Lock Tower, and also the hour before the services. If you want more information, you can contact Lockett Tower Park at 319-233-3146. And let's see, who else? James Trebon of rural Fairbank, Iowa, has passed. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, October 14th, at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church, Fairbank in Iowa. William Irvin has passed on Thursday, and with his family by his side. And his service will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, 13th of October, at Dahl Van Hove School, Schoof, that's S-C-H-O-O-F, Funeral Home. And visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, the 12th of October, at the Funeral Home, and resuming at 10 a.m. on Friday until the time of the service. Memorials are also to the family. And Edward Earl of Van Dorn has passed on Sunday. And let's see, his nickname is Pete. Pete was brought home from the hospital to the family residence in Highland, where he lived until moving to Friendship Village in 2021. His celebration of life will take place later this fall. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Cedar Valley Hospice. All right, let's now go on here. It's so hard to believe, but we are rapidly approaching the holidays. Here's an article regarding Christmas. Christmas assistance applications sought for families in need in Waterloo. The Salvation Army of Waterloo Cedar Falls will once again be helping families in need this Christmas season. Those in need of Christmas assistance can complete an online application located at Sangletree, let me spell that, SAANGELtree.org, until October 20th. Registration is limited to residents of Black Hawk County. Families may register children ages newborn to 17. There will be some small changes in the online application this year. An invitation code will be required to help verify working email addresses and help reduce the number of duplicate accounts. Also new this year is that the application is now available in Romanian, as well as Spanish and English. Applicants should be prepared to upload supporting documents, including photo ID, in the form of a state-issued ID, proof of income, and birth certificates for all children registered. In place of birth certificates, school registrations, or immunization records that display the child's name and date of birth will be accepted. Applicants who need assistance completing the application can call the Salvation Army. Here's the telephone number, 319-235-9358, to schedule an appointment with staff and volunteers to meet the increased need of applicants. The Salvation Army is requesting donations of new in-package toys, and donations can be dropped off at 89 Franklin Street in Waterloo at 9 a.m. to noon, and 1 to 3 p.m. on Monday through Thursday, and 9 a.m. to noon on Friday. And the deadline for toy donations is the 8th of December. 53-year-old Hardin company man fatally shot while coyote hunting in Alden. An Alden man was killed in a hunting accident Sunday night in northern Hardin County. Mark Ahrens, age 53, of Alden, was hunting coyotes with friends on private land approximately 2 miles north of Alden. The hunters were separated by several hundred yards when around 8 p.m., Ahrens was struck by a single rifle shot. The incident remains under investigation. Ahrens was transported to Hanson Family Hospital in Iowa Falls, where he was pronounced dead. The state medical officer's office, medical examiner's office, will be conducting an autopsy as part of the investigation. Coyotes are nocturnal animals, so hunting coyotes is often done at night, with hunters utilizing various night vision technology, including thermal imaging scopes. We stress the importance of identifying your target before taking a shot, and that's even more important when hunting at night and using thermal technology, says Captain Matt Bruner with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Law Enforcement Bureau. The same can be said about the importance of the hunting plan, especially at night, and following that plan when in the field. The Iowa DNR and the Hardin County Sheriff's Office responded to the incident, and officers were on the scene again on Monday. Retired Waverly pastor runs for mayor. Mark Anderson says he's a unifying voice. In Waverly, Mark Anderson, 60, is making a run at Waverly mayor and hopes voters will give him a chance to lead. The retired Lutheran pastor, formerly of St. Paul's Lutheran Church and School, is in the midst of his first political campaign, but previously served as an appointee to the Waverly Library Board of Trustees for 2 terms and the Iowa Council on Human Services for about a decade. Mayor Adam Hoffman is not seeking a 3rd term so he can focus on his family and new career as Bremer County Treasurer. Four-term council member Tim Kangas also has filed for the race, making it contested after Hoffman was elected without competition in 2021. My father taught me that no matter what your situation, where you lived should be a little bit better because you lived there, he said. I'm able to retire a little young, so I've got the time, enthusiasm, and energy. I love the people, and I'm volunteering to serve as their mayor because that's the skill set I bring. The La Crosse, Wisconsin native moved to Waverly about 22 years ago and was a pastor for more than 35 years, including time spent as an assistant to the bishop at the Northeastern Iowa Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. He's now promoting his mayoral campaign as one focused on community, unity, and prosperity. I want to be the number one spokesperson, explaining why this is such a great town to live in, he said. Anderson thinks that his past experience will lend well to tackling Waverly's biggest challenges relating to housing, workforce, and childcare. Bartles Lutheran Retirement has had instances when certain positions have attracted 0 applicants, he says. And it's really hard to find a place to live, he said. 60% of the people who work here don't even live here. Anderson says that his views align with those of the current administration, deflecting any possibilities running to make noticeable changes. But however, he referenced past issues like the decision regarding the 3rd Street Southeast Green Bridge, saying that those discussions got particularly nasty. He feels during the heated discussions that he'd be the best person to bring people together. But he says Waverly will be the winner no matter the outcome in the mayoral election. I feel like I'm bring more of a citizen's perspective, Anderson says. But I know Tim Kangas and feel the city will be really well prepared no matter who wins. All right, let's go on here. see what else do we have. All right, let's take a look at the weather outlook here for the next 5 days here. Today, plenty of sunshine, high of 62. Tonight, clear, chilly, 36 degrees. Tomorrow, variable cloudiness, warmer, high of 64, a low of 50. Thursday, windy and cooler with rain, high of 57, a low of 53. Friday, windy with periods of rain, high of 60, low of 45. And the outlook for Saturday, continued cloudy and breezy, high of 56 and a low of 45. Let's take a look now at the national forecast. Showers will stretch from Michigan through Maine and southward through Connecticut today. Meanwhile, system will continue to push ashore in the northwest, bringing steady rain to the coasts, an area of cool air and showers expanding into Idaho and western Montana. Showers and thunderstorms, some heavy, will erupt in South Texas. All right, we are now at the 360 degrees, better known as the 360 National and World Report section of the paper. This is the Section C section for Tuesday, October 10th. And let's take a look here. I've got a big headline here, and it says Immigration Border Challenges. Now, just below that headline, there is a long list of people walking, and it says here that migrants who entered the U.S. by crossing the Rio Grande from Mexico are lined up on the September 23rd in Eagle Pass, Texas, for processing by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Okay, now let's take a look a little in more detail here. Biden's call to expand wall draws criticism. There's a picture of the wall, which was the shot was taken in July 14th, 2021, near La Grulla, Texas. In Miami, the ad sounds like something out of the GOP 2024 playbook, trumpeting a senator's work with Republicans to crack down on the flow of fentanyl and other illegal drugs into the U.S., getting tough on Chinese interests, helping smugglers, and noting how he wrote a bill signed by Donald Trump to increase funding for Border Patrol. Actually, it's a commercial for Senator Sherrod Brown, an Ohio Democrat, facing a tough re-election fight that will help decide control of the Senate. Ohioans trust Sherrod Brown to keep us safe, says the narrator of the ad, sponsored by the Democratic Aligned Duty and Country PAC. His campaign declined to comment. The message is one more indication of the political and security challenges that the U.S. and Mexico border presented for President Joe Biden. Some Democrats across the country are distancing themselves from the White House, and polls indicate that widespread frustration with Biden's handling of immigration and the border is creating a major liability for the president's bid for re-election. Let's go to the next page here to continue this article here. The Biden administration this past week took actions seen by many as moving to the right on immigration. The Department of Homeland Security waived environmental and other reviews to construct new portions of the border wall in South Texas after Biden pledged during the 2020 campaign that he would build not another foot of wall. And U.S. officials said that they would resume deportations to Venezuela not long after the administration increased protected status for thousands of people from the country. Both moves inflamed conservatives and liberals alike. Many Republicans accused Biden of being too late to adopt former President Donald Trump's ideas on a border wall, while liberals who oppose additional border restrictions accused the White House of betraying campaign pledges. My frustration has been that we are not addressing immigration in a holistic way as a country. We're depending on the president alone, said Representative Veronica Escobar of Texas, a Democrat who represents the border city of El Paso. and is a national co-chair of the Biden re-election campaign. We're treating people from different nationalities in a different way. And the pathways that have been created are being challenged in court consistently. Biden said that his administration moved forward with the border wall because it was required by Congress during the Trump administration, even though he considers it ineffective. His re-election campaign pointed to Trump's record at the border, including his administration's practice of separating immigrant families as a deterrence measure and the temporary detention of children in warehouses in chain-link cells. Make America Great Again Republicans are running on the legacy of Donald Trump's playbook of family separation, caging kids, and shouting border without any serious solutions, says Kevin Muntz, a spokesperson for Biden's reelection campaign, referring to supporters of Trump's Make America Great Again movement. Border crossings hit two-decade highs under Trump, but fell during the first months of the COVID-19 pandemic, with immigration authorities expelling most border crossers using a public health rule known as Title 42. Upon taking office, Biden paused border wall construction and canceled the Trump administration's Remain in Mexico program, but kept expelling many people under Title 42 until this past May. Still, border crossings are skyrocketing, which some observers blame on Biden's administration for creating the perception that the border is open. The White House counters that migration surge across the Western Hemisphere due to regional challenges out of the administration's control. Conservative media outlets often spotlight border crossings and blame Biden for creating what they say is a crisis. Biden also was criticized by many in his own party, including Democratic mayors and governors who want more help caring for newly arriving migrants. Republican-led border states started busing thousands of immigrants to Democratic-led cities across the country, creating in many places a shortage of space that led to makeshift shelters and camps. In Chicago, O'Hare International Airport is housing hundreds of migrants, from babies to the elderly, at a shuttle bus center. They sleep on cardboard pads on the floor and share airport bathrooms. New York Mayor Eric Adams went to Mexico to implore would-be migrants not to come. He accused the Biden administration of not providing enough money or resources for the city to process migrants, telling reporters this summer, "The president and the White House have failed New York City on this issue." Polling suggests that Americans across the political spectrum, even some people sympathetic to immigration, are concerned. A Marquette Law School poll of registered voters conducted in late September gave Trump, the front runner for the 2024 GOP nomination, a 24-point advantage over Biden on handling immigration and border security issues, 52% to 28%. Escobar said that she's concerned that immigration could hurt the president's reelection efforts. There's going to be a tendency to blame the White House when, in fact, this has been a failure on Congress, she said. The last major immigration reform approved by Congress was in 1990. Good heavens, that was 33 years ago. That is a long time. All right, let's move on here with the paper and take a look now at some more international news here. Let's take a look here. Of course, I'm sure you're all well aware that that Israel and the Palestinian people are at war yet again. And the title of this article is "Israel Vows to Lay Siege to the Gaza Strip." In Jerusalem, Israel vowed to lay total siege to the Gaza Strip on Monday as its military scoured the country's south for militants guarding breaches in its border fence and pounded the impoverished Hamas-ruled territory in the wake of an unprecedented weekend incursion. More than 2 days after Hamas launched its surprise attack, the military said that the fighting had largely died down for now. Israel's vaunted military and intelligence apparatus was caught completely off guard, bringing heavy battles to its streets for the first time in decades. Israel formally declared war on Sunday, and the army called up around 300,000 reservists, portending great fighting ahead and a possible ground assault into Gaza, a move that in the past has brought intensified casualties. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to destroy the military and governing capabilities of the militant group, which is deeply rooted in Gaza and has ruled unchallenged since 2007. And as Israel hit more than 1,000 targets in Gaza and its tanks and drones guarded openings in the border fence to prevent more infiltrations. Palestinian militants continue to firing barrage of rockets, setting off air raid sirens in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. But civilians have paid a high price. Around 700 people have been killed in Israel, a staggering toll by the scale of its recent conflicts. Nearly 500 have been killed in Gaza, an enclave of 2.3 million Palestinians born in Israel and Egypt. Palestinian militant groups claim to be holding over 130 people captured in Israel and dragged to Gaza. The armed wing of Hamas said on its Telegram channel that four of them were killed in Israeli airstrikes. That claim could not be independently confirmed, but underscored the dilemma facing Israel's government as it bombards a territory where its own citizens are held captive. In an effort to further ratchet up the pressure on Hamas, Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant ordered a complete siege of Gaza, saying that the authorities would cut electricity and prevent food and fuel from entering the territory. He said that Israel was at war with human animals, using the kind of dehumanizing language often heard on both sides at times of soaring tensions. Israel and Egypt have imposed various levels of blockade on Gaza since Hamas seized power, but in recent years, Israel had provided limited electricity and allowed the import of food, fuel, and consumer goods while heavily restricting travel in and out. After about 48 hours of pitched battles inside Israel, the chief military spokesperson, Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, told reporters Israel has control of its borders and communities. He said that there had been some isolated incidents early on Monday, but that at this stage there is no fighting in the communities. But he added that militants may remain inside Israel and said that 15 of 24 border communities have been evacuated, with the rest expected to be emptied in the coming day. So yet again, more conflict in the Mideast. Such a sad thing. All right, let's take a look. Let's keep moving down here on our page here. Let's take a look and see what we've got. We got just a couple minutes left. I'm going to read, I can't read all of it, but I'm going to read quickly a little bit of this traditional automakers behind on EVs. After a decade of being trounced by Tesla, this was supposed to be the year that traditional automakers finally put up a fight for electric cars. General Motors was committing its biggest brands to a new line of electric models. Ford and Volkswagen were ramping up production of EVs designed for the masses. It was, many predicted, time for the automotive world order to reassert itself. Things haven't turned out that way. Ford vaunted F-150 Lightning has been outsold by the RIT from Rivian, R-I-V-I-A-N, a startup that sold its first vehicle just 2 years ago. GM's lineup of new EVs has suffered crippling setbacks in battery manufacturing. In July, Volkswagen Chief Executive Office Thomas Schaefer succinctly summarized his own company's EV's competitiveness. The roof is on fire, with just 3 months remaining of 2023. It's been a redemption story for legacy automakers, than further evidence of their quagmire. In the U.S., Tesla has been expanding production about as fast as all of the competitors combined. And as I say, the article goes on, it's quite lengthy. But we have to stop here, unfortunately. And we are and have been reading The Courier today, the e-edition. I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and you have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk again soon. Get out and enjoy this fall weather. So long.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Alrighty.
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing. It really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.